Hello and welcome to the 9th episode of On the Pod, My Lord. I'm your usual host, James Rushton, joined this time by Adam Clark and Adam Clark only. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm doing well. Still got a little bit of a cold post New Year celebrations, but yeah, doing fine. Looking forward to some winter football.
Sounds like you're having a better winter transfer window than one Aston Villa, who have so far been soundly beaten by a Neil Warnock Cardiff side. Adam, any reflections on that match before we get into it?
It's just a very disappointing loss. I watched it maybe along with many other Villa fans who couldn't get along to the match on a dodgy stream from someone's phone in the away stand.
In the stands, yeah.
And even from then, it didn't look like a good performance. It was just, though there was a little bit of controversy about some statistics that came out afterwards, they were pretty universally awful. Just looked like we didn't have any attacking plan, obviously very much missing Jonathan Codger that day, and a real prompt to get moving in the winter transfer window.
Tis a season to panic by. January transfer windows are usually quite insane, but we'll go back to the first transfer window, the big transfer window of the season, the summer transfer window. Villa were very busy, Adam. We bought Gallini, Alfic, James Chester, Richie Dillat, Mar Jedinak, Aaron Tishbola, Albert Adoma, Jonathan Codger, and Ross McCormack. I almost said Ronnie McCormack then, I'm not sure why, but Ross McCormack. Yeah. How have we got on with those guys?
Let's start with the positive, shall we? Because I think it's always nice. So let's start with Jonathan Codger. What can you say? I don't know how many goals it is. Is it 9, 10 goals, something like that?
He's doing all right. He's not doing too bad. Well, my personal feeling, he's filled a big hole in Aston Villa, a big hole left since the departure of one Christian Benteke. Codger can do it all, Adam.
And he's been doing it even when he's been played on the left wing, which has been an interesting factor of his play. But yeah, he scored some great goals. He seems to poach in around the box. He seems to have built up some good playing relationships already with some of the other players in the team. And he's providing what we really needed, which is just the one regular goal scorer.
Yeah, I've just looked at the stats. It is 9 goals thus far, which is impressive for an Aston Villa forward, I will say. Championship strike rates are usually hitting the 20s. They're manipulated by how many matches are in the Championship. They're obviously going to be higher than the Premier League strike tallies. And especially because it's such a diverse league. At the bottom, you've got teams that are clawing their way out of League One. And at the top, you've got Premiership quality teams and the calibre of the highest league in England. So yeah, the stats are a bit mixed up because of the we're in the Championship, but he's 9 goals, 23 games. That hasn't happened at Villa for a while, especially not last year when we were really struggling to find a goal at all. Jonathan Codger has been the absolute highlight for me, Adam. One thing I will say about him though, and one negative I can personally find, is that he will always look to shoot rather than pass, and that may be what leads him to score so many times. But there are times when, there is a striker sitting, waiting for the through ball, and it's a goal. Yeah. He's only got one assist thus far, and that's a bit dodgy. But, what he's done is amazing. What he provides to Aston Villa is incredible. He's getting on the end of chances and converting them into goals. That's what matters to me.
Yeah, but there's an element of selfishness that you want in a striker.
Exactly.
There's just a few times you've seen, especially Ross McCormack, has been a little bit frustrated sometimes when he's not got a pass from Codger, who's been up in support. You'd like to see that relationship maybe just develop a little bit more, especially because Codger has been played out that left side, which would suggest that he's being asked to do a little bit of linking up as well as just being a front man. But can't criticise him too harshly. He's been the standout.
No, it would be a minor fault, if anything. But that leads us on to one Ross McCormack, who's been very mixed, I'd say. Started off quite well. Recently, he's found it a bit hard, but I find that might link with the form of one Jonathan Codger. As you said, Ross McCormack's waiting there, hands in the air, clear-cut chance. If he doesn't get the ball, he can't score. There's been times when he's missed absolute sitters, but his stats might be, inflated and deflated by the form of Codger. If Codger's taking the ball away and scoring, then McCormack can't. It's impossible.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Let's be clear, obviously McCormack hasn't played.
There's been times when he hasn't been in the first 11, and even on the sub bench.
Yeah, and there's even been rumours that we were looking to sell him, or that he'd be out of the plans, or was fighting for his place earlier in the season, which I don't think is the best situation for him to be in. Especially considering how much money we paid for him in the summer. You'd like to see him get a bit more of a central role.
Yeah, that's the question, Adam. Are Steve Bruce and Aston Villa using Ross McCormack wrong?
It feels a little bit like that. It's kind of difficult to know in terms of who he's linked up with. Well, he links up well with Jack Grealish. You know, I think they're both technical players. They both like playing in the little pockets of space, which has been good. But that hasn't necessarily linked up so far with Jonathan Codger's play. And I would also mention maybe another of our attacking transfers in some transfer here with Albert Adoma. Adoma and Codger work well. Grealish and McCormack work well. We haven't seen those four as a quartet work well together. I think if those four could click and start finding each other in spaces, then we'd have a really deadly attacking force.
Looks like their chemistry might be interrupted though, due to, you know, the fact that the window is open. But let's move on anyway. So one Albert Adoma, who has been a surprise for me. Middlesbrough fans didn't seem to rate him too much, but I think he's been one of our better players. He has made his mistakes, but Villa are scoring because of him. He's making chances. And he doesn't seem to let anything get him down. You know, confidence is important in a forward player. Confidence and composure make goals. And Adoma seems to be doing a lot.
Yeah, there's a great pleasure in getting a player into a position and him just instantly doing the things that you want to see done in that position.
Yeah.
You know, he's a winger, he runs, he crosses, and he gets in the box when he needs to. And that's great.
Yeah, exactly. The Championship's a perfect league for wingers. It's, you know, you aren't harkened down by the lack of games in the Premier League, and teams have got so much time to plan for you and nitpick the little faults in your team via data analysts and teams of scouts. That does happen in the Championship, but it's a more physical league I've found so far from watching it in person and on the TV. And Adoma's really thriving in that, I feel. He can sit out wide, he doesn't mind hugging the touchline and bringing in those deep early crosses. And it's unfortunate that Villa have actually decided to sell, Rudy just said, because this is finally the environment and we've finally got the players for a player like him to thrive. Luckily, Codger doesn't seem to be that bad in the air, so we are making a bit of Adoma. We are getting the most out of Adoma.
And as a brief side, I'm going to say, in terms of him coming to us from Middlesbrough and us sending Adama Traore, I'm very comfortable about how that's worked out.
Yeah, a brief aside on Adama. When he started for Middlesbrough, the media were going mad. You know, this player's tearing it apart, but the sad thing is that I think everyone's starting to realise what we realise, that Adama at the moment seems to be a one-trick pony. It's Gabby Abanlahor without the scoring ability. Straight running, mazy runs, bursts of speed, but not much is happening on his side. It is a shame. He's a great talent, but I think everyone's realising what we already knew.
Yeah, and what you hear always is like, well, maybe we're approaching. He came from the youth academy at Barcelona. If the youth academy at Barcelona can't teach you to pass at the right moment or release the ball at the right moment, somehow I doubt Middlesbrough are going to sort it out, or whatever team he then moves on to next.
Yeah, and I mean, letting Albert Adoma go, it might make sense for them, because, you know, he's getting towards he's in the peak of his career now for a winger, 28 to 30, looking to, you know, move him on. He dropped down the leagues, if you may. No offence, Albert, if you are some reason listening. But, you know, his ability is making Villa score goals, and, you know, Codger is thriving on that. But there's a deep shame for me in our summer transfer dealings, Adam, and that's what we've done to Aaron Tshibola.
Right, yeah.
Who seemed to be a fantastic player and who now can't get a game.
Yeah.
Any feelings on that?
The negative side. So obviously in that central midfield, Mile Jedinak appears to have won himself a permanent starting place. Rightfully, I think. Yeah, he's been a consistent and solid performer. But it has been one of Ashley Westwood or one of Gary Gardner who has been getting alongside him rather than Aaron Tshibola. And it's very hard to trace exactly why Tshibola has been excluded from that choice.
I can't remember him doing anything wrong.
No. Yeah, I can remember him putting in some not sterling performances. There's been problems in that central midfield and he has occasionally been part of them. But certainly it hasn't looked improved without him in it. And when talking about that Cardiff match, it was really quite improved when he was in it, because he was more ambitious, he started driving the play forwards. You know, he's a young guy, so he's still got some confidence to bring the ball forwards to try and make something happen, which certainly Westwood, you know, appears to have totally lost. And Gardner, oddly, appears to be a little bit tentative nowadays as well.
It seems weird about Tish because I was asked by the Reading blog the other day on SB Nation about you know how Tish Pillar was getting along, and I didn't know what to say. I mean, they know his talent, they know his potential, and it seems a weird, you know, a weird thing that he isn't getting games under Bruce, especially because, you know, with our weakness in midfield, maybe it is that we need a midfielder, we need a creative player, but maybe we've already got them. You know, it's not like we do not have depth in midfield, we're just deciding to play in formations that leave us kind of weak in midfield, especially with a pivot of Jedinak and Gardner, who can't do much on their own. No fault of their own, they're just players who need support because of their various flaws. But that moves us on to Millie Jedinak. Jury's still out on him for me, Adam.
Okay, you're striking a little bit of a more negative note than I think most of the Villa fan base. I think most of the Villa fan base are ready to love him.
Oh, yeah, I do like him. I spot the flaws in some of his play, and it's not his fault. That's why I do not want to lay it on Fick. It's like Gardner. I don't want to lay it on Fick because their faults are the problems in the system they're playing. If they're the only two players who can play in that system, the two midfielders we're deciding to play, and when things go wrong, it's going to happen to them. It's not their fault. It's like Westwood. When pressure's applied for that middle, it's only him and Gardner, instead of him, Gardner, Bakuna, or Tishbola. Jedinak, he's aging. There's reasons for Palace to let him go. He can hit a killer ball. He's a great passer. He wins the ball, but he lacks pace. And I feel like if you're playing him with Westwood and Gardner, both players who aren't exactly the most athletic, and they're similar roles as well. They're deep lying, looking to, you know, start attacks from the back. We're looking to win the ball and pass it on, recycle possession. Jedinak for me looks a victim of our system. I think we're playing too thin for him. I do like him. I think he's an impressive player, and I've certainly seen some of his qualities. But again, it doesn't look like we're making the most of him.
So this is something I've been noticing amongst fans, that lots of fans are saying the midfield's just not good enough, that we need other central midfielders. But then some fans are saying, well, we're only playing two central midfielders, you know, in a 4-2-3-1. I mean, I'll point out, playing two central midfielders in a 4-2-3-1 is hardly an uncommon tactic.
Yeah.
Lots of people play the double pivot in front of the central defence.
Of course, yeah.
But it does require, you know, certain players. It does require a certain mix of passing ability, the ability to kind of drive the ball forwards, obviously some defensive awareness as well. And you're right, Milo Jedinak is limited. He wins a lot of balls. I think he distributes... I wouldn't necessarily class him as a great passer. He distributes sensibly and evenly. I think your point about the pace is an interesting one. My only worry about Milo Jedinak sometimes is he's not quite sure where he's meant to be. If you've got the deepest lying central midfielder, they can either be your defensive ball winner or they can be your distributor, or in very rare cases you might get a player who can be both of those, but you're very lucky if that's the case. Sometimes it's not clear whether Jedinak is that deepest lying midfielder or whether he's the one winning the ball further up the pitch. Because if he is the one winning the ball further up the pitch, he can't really drive forwards with it. You know, he's not at that stage of his career. And if he's the deepest lying midfielder, he's not necessarily the greatest distributor of the ball. So maybe he's limited in those routes. But he adds lots of defensive solidity. You know, he does win a lot of area balls. You know, we look more solid with him in there.
Yeah, I think the problem with Jedinak is he's expected to do it all. He's expected to, as you said, he's expected to be the ball-winning midfielder, but he's also expected to, you know, be the playmaker at the same time. He doesn't know where he is. And I think he's crying out for an additional midfielder. Someone like, you know, as chance would have it, Aaron Tishbola, who's got pace, is a perfect box-to-box midfielder. Or, you know, a Fabian Delph, God forbid, should I say that. We need a box-to-box midfielder to, you know, support these players, because Gary Gardner is a quality championship midfielder. We saw that over the past number of years where he has been on loan at good championship sides and performed relatively well. You know, Nottingham Forest fans speak very highly of him. That's not for no reason. But we seem to be putting these players into positions where they can't really do much. Jedinak and Gardner seem to constantly get caught out. And as I've said, it seems to be no fault of their own. It's just because teams know where to apply the pressure, and that's through the middle. Because we don't have, you know, Paul Pogba and Ander Herrera to be a double pivot or anything like that. We don't have a world-class two midfield, and we seem to be playing a system that's a bit too much for us at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we have seen recently a shift towards a 4-3-3. There's been, you know, another central midfielder put in there, often Leandro Bakuna, to kind of shore things up a little bit, which has half worked.
Yeah, I mean, there's no perfect fix for it. I mean, if Villa start playing a different formation, what happens to the forwards who are doing relatively well? Kodja, Adoma, McCormack, all those group of players who seem to be kind of finding their feet and linking up a bit better than they were before. Do we, you know, impact that chemistry by taking one of those wingers away or playing more narrow? Right? So,
and while I have, I have nothing against Bakuna, putting Bakuna in order to leave out one of McCormack, Adoma, Grealish, Hodger feels like a waste.
Exactly. I wouldn't want to be Steve Bruce, let's put it that way. But moving on to our defence, we brought in our group these players now, Adam, because we've went through the positives and negatives. We've got Galini, Alphick, Chester and Delap.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mixed bunch. Chester stands out above all.
Yeah, well, I would say let's pull Chester and Elphick together in contrasting tales.
Yes.
You know, of our two former Premier League captains brought down to Villa to lead our central defence, and one of them is.
Yeah, and it wasn't the one I'd expecting it to be. No. Chester is everything I want from Elphick and more, but Elphick isn't what I expected from Alfik. In fact, Nathan Baker, someone who I thought was a write-off, who isn't going to get a game at Villa, is took his place, which is insane to imagine that at the start of the season, but that's where we are.
I don't want to come to decisions too early, but it feels like Bournemouth may have known something when they sold Alfik. Maybe they know that he'd lost that bit of pace, or maybe they know that he'd lost that commanding presence he had. But it was clear just early in the season when we were playing him as part of a central pairing. Yeah, he just looked shaky. You know, he often looked like he was slow on the turn, looked like he wasn't winning balls, looked like strikers were bullying him. There were a couple of goals that were pretty much directly attributable to him. Now, to be fair, most of his appearances came under Roberto Di Matteo at a time when the side wasn't performing very well. You have to say that James Chester has absolutely made that central position his own.
Oh yeah, of course. The thing is with Alfie, look how vulnerable he looks against strikers like, you know, Dexter Blackstock, Connor Washington and Dwight Gayle.
Mm.
Imagine if he was up against an Aguero. It'd be a massacre. Bournemouth, you know, they've done the right thing and they've shored up their defence. I expected more. I expected a lot more. I won't be too, you know, harsh on him because he was brought in as a dressing room leader. He was brought to sort out the toxicity that was emerging from that dressing room. It looks like he's done that. He looks like he's done his job there. The shame is that the qualities you expect from him on the pitch don't seem to exist at all. And that might be a product of his age, because every club he's been at, the Brighton fans and Bournemouth fans speak very highly of him. So it is a shame. You know, I don't want to see a player like Alfik be put out, you know, to pasture and wasted at Aston Villa, where he's just going to, you know, look a mess because people are better than him and he can't do his own job at this level. Maybe he's a League One player or a League Two player now. Who knows? Maybe it's a bad run of form. But I did expect a lot more from Alfik, and I can't put my finger on what's gone wrong. He didn't look this vulnerable before. Seems to have got worse every match.
You know, I just double-checked the ages. So, yeah, I mean, James Chester is 27. Tommy Alfik is 29. 29 as a central defender.
That's a peak. This is your best level.
You know, that's not normally where you would expect a noticeable decline. You know, maybe when you start looking at 32, 33, that's when you think. So it's an odd one. I had Tommy Elphick down, you know, in our preseason predictions as our star player of the year. You know, I thought he was going to be our leader on the field, on and off the field. That's just not happened. But as you said, that Chester-Baker combination, yeah, I'm happy with our central defence that I have been for many years.
Winning combination, I think. But there's two final parts of the summer business, Galini and Delat. I feel very unfair on judging Delat. He got injured very early on into his Villa career. It was quite a horrific injury.
Yeah.
But he didn't look like much of an improvement at right back. Like, he didn't look like a great deal, but I don't think that was his role. I think he was just brought in to shore up that position, because the choices are Micah Richards and Alan Hutton, and adding a third choice that won't do any harm at all. Got to see more from Richie, but chances are if we get promoted next year, I don't think he'll feature at all, quite unfairly.
Yeah, I'm just going to call that one. You know, there's not enough games to judge him on.
Yeah.
And then there was an injury, so
not enough research.
Yeah.
But yeah, Galini, Pierluigi Galini is our last one, Adam. And he's, I feel like this is another player like Tishwelu who's been done quite harshly by Steve Bruce.
Yeah, I've got to say, so over at 7,500 to Holt, we're, I think, pretty much unanimously a little bit frustrated with the side, with the apparent sidelining of Pierluigi Gagliardi. I think that's fair to say. I don't think there's anyone on the staff who wouldn't have liked to see the young Italian given a better, you know, a more of a run out.
Yeah, I mean, goalkeepers aren't expected to be that good when they're, you know, that young. It's a position that's based on experience and mentality. You can only get better at goalkeeping via making those mistakes and through, you know, enduring those hard times and where you're swamped with goals. So when, you know, things are looking good and they're all rosy, you can be the best goalkeeper you can be to stop those goals going in. Gagliardi, he's made his mistakes. That's admittable. But, you know, at the age he is, I don't know why we're doing what we're doing. That's how you ruin players, you know, not showing your faith in them. Surely he can win the position back. But it looks like Sam Johnston, who we've signed on loan from United just for the end of the season, is going to be our number one from now on. And,
I mean,
I'm not sure about that.
Gagliardi made early mistakes. And then it looked like he'd fixed them. You know, it looked like he was in a good run of form. And then I think he made a few more errors. But then Mark Bunn was brought in. And I think, you know, this kind of Mark Bunn being brought in and undermining our regular first team keeper, we've seen it before. It was bad before. It's bad now.
Yeah. I wouldn't be against, you know, rotating goalkeeper situationally. You know, against Burton, Mark Bunn was fantastic. Sometimes you need an older, experienced hand against those teams that are going to look to make the most of their chances, like a Burton, because they're not going to get very many. Actually, Villa gave them abundance of chances. But Gagliardi, I think you have to show faith in him. Jack said, you know, our guy Jack Grimsey on the Hulkcast said he can only improve.
Mm.
So, you know, this is the worst he's ever going to be.
And our frustration is definitely centered around the fact, okay, if you want an experienced keeper, bring in an experienced keeper. Don't bring in a 23-year-old loney from Manchester United.
Yeah, there's nothing against Sam Johnson. From what I've heard, he was very impressive at Preston North End and was key to their promotion from League One. But it doesn't solve the problem that we have of an inexperienced goalkeeper. Maybe Sam Johnson is older than he seems. Maybe, you know, he's an old head on young shoulders. We've yet to see that, and, you know, ideally we'll see it today against Tottenham. But it doesn't solve the issue of Gagliardi. What I'd say about Gagliardi as well, knowing from my knowledge of Serie A, is that we have an asset on our hands. And if you're talking about Moneyball and finances and recycling talent to get the most out of it, the most money and talent out of it, we have got the single best available Italian goalkeeper right now. We're going to drive down his value. We're going to sell him to a team like Napoli, Udinese, for $2 million, and he's going to be playing in the Champions League or Europa League in a few seasons. That's it.
Yeah, that's clear. I mean, the problem is, if you look at things in the mobile way, partly you could say, great, sell him now while his value is inflated as the young Italian prospect, or partly you could say, hold on to him for a couple more years, play him regularly, and then sell him for 20, 30 million down the line. Just totally depends on your assessment of where he'll end up. Obviously, the Villa coaching team have made that assessment right now. But yeah, it's one I'm unhappy about. And we'll see how it goes.
So summing up Villa's summer transfer window. We've got a little bit more of summing up to do, Adam. We made a few predictions at the start of the season, didn't we?
We did indeed. And while we can't sum them up yet, we can certainly give a progress report.
Yeah, well, you said we're finishing second.
I did. How do you... you said we finished from first.
Well, they're not too far apart, Adam. They're not too far apart. You have to do the same things to finish first as you do to do to finish second. But our friend Ellis, who usually joins us on the podcast, said eighth, and he's looking right about now. Alex Carson does the math on our blog. Thankfully, we've got someone who can, you know, add up a few numbers. And his predictions are quite worrying, and it seems that right now, every single game for Aston Villa is a must-win if they are to even think about making the playoffs. That worries me, because, you know, you can't argue with math.
Yeah,
as much as I like to, you know, be blood and thunder and passion.
Just a bit more detail on that. I think it's that Steve Bruce has been running at what would normally be a high playoff, possible automatic promotion points pace, though that may have changed slightly with the Cardiff match. But obviously, considering the bad start we had, that's looking like it's only going to get us to the fringes of a playoff place. And as Alex, in a very good piece, pointed out, our next four games are against teams who are in the bottom, our next three actually after Cardiff, against teams who are in the bottom half of the Championship, who we should be expecting to beat. And if we got a head start by beating all of them, we'd be sitting pretty for playoff places. But that loss against Cardiff is throwing things into doubt.
Yeah, makes it very scary. So I think Ellis is right. I don't. The pessimist in me believes that we won't make the playoffs, but the optimist who believes in, you know, the Tim Sherwood school of football would say that Villa can go on rampage, make the playoffs. But the Championship's an unpredictable thing, as we've known when we saw Brighton fall away from the title last year.
Yeah,
after just, you know, surging forward.
There's just so many teams that you've got to compete.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I believe we're in 12th now, so we've got, you know, five teams to get past just to get into the playoff places. You know, and then obviously the playoff process itself is a pretty uncertain one. But it is the January transfer window, which is presumably the opportunity to kind of reset those aims.
Yeah, as I said at the start, it's the season for panic buying. The January transfer window is pretty much defined by it, because you can assess your needs halfway through the season and spend £60 million on not meeting those needs and falling short of the season. The January transfer window is now open, isn't it, Adam? So what do we expect? What do we need from Villa? What do we need them to pursue?
Should we first start the question, what are we aiming for? Is the aim of this January transfer window to enable us to get into the playoffs? Or is it to enable us to crush the Championship next year? Or is it just to fix some holes in the squad? I mean, what do we think our budget looks like? What do we think our goals look like?
Well, under Tony Shaw, I think our budget may be endless, especially for the Championship. Well, saying that, we've been spending some quite high fees on players so far. Rumour is around £25 million, which I think is pretty, you know, extending with a Gested sale, that's £31 million. You know, for halfway through a season, £31 million injected to the team can do a lot.
Oh yeah, that's one thing we didn't talk about. Do we want to quickly talk about Rudy Gested's sale?
Why not? I'm disappointed with it. Really disappointed with it, Adam. I understand we need to sell a striker, but we've got commodities in that strike force that could go for a lot more and are far more replaceable than Rudy just said. You know, he's not the best player in the world, but we don't need ability. What we need is options. What we need is, you know, ways to build against different teams, ways to assess what our team can offer, and ways to plan for different teams. Rudy just said hasn't failed to impress thus far in the Championship when he's played.
Yeah.
In my opinion, anyway.
Rudy just said, you know, lots of fans down him, lots of fans saying, you know, that he's, you know, you're hearing the kind of typical stuff, worst player I've ever seen, you know, horrible control, Championship player. Let's point out, Rudy just said scored, I think, 6 goals in the Premier League last season. Rudy just said has scored, I think, 5 goals for us so far in the Championship this season. Gabby O'Connor has scored 1 goal in the Premier League last season, and no goals for us in the Championship so far this season. So why is one of those our third choice striker and one of those has just been sold?
Yeah, Rudy hasn't done badly this year, considering how little he's played. You know, he's made 18 appearances, but most of those have been off the bench for 10 minutes. He's scored 4 goals so far. You know, that's not bad for our team. He's offered an option as well. He won us a penalty against Leeds that saved the match. That doesn't happen without Justed. It's...
yeah.
I find it hard to believe that we've kept on to Jordan Ayew, and this is no offence, he offers a lot to the team, but his value is so inflated right now, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And to let Justed go for, you know, what amounts to right now is pennies, £6 million, you know, believe it or not, is absolutely nothing for a footballer in this climate. It's weird. You know, we've got 3 Jordan Ayews, if you want to look at it that way. We've got Kodjia, McCormack and Ayew himself right now, who play in a similar position, who do similar things, you know, who can drop deep, win the ball back, recycle the possession, move into, you know, show a bit of flair and technique whilst attacking and crack off a long shot. Rudy just said is the only Rudy just said we've got. Which is it strikes me weird that we'd allow that to happen only to replace him with an expensive average option.
So, which you assume brings us to the point, do we think that there will be a striker brought in this January transfer window?
I'd find it really annoying if we did, to be quite honest. I mean, it seems like the perfect time to buy one, but I think that lulls you into a false sense of thinking about this. When you truly think about this, Jonathan Kodjia is, you know, a month from coming back to Aston Villa. What is a month? I mean, Steve Bruce has tried to get his best out of Gabby Abundanhall, and it actually looks like it's starting to kind of click there. You know, he didn't have a bad game against Cardiff. He made a few chances, and thankfully, you know, if it weren't for their keeper having the game of his life, he'd have had two goals, Adam. You know, for Gabby Abundanhall, two goals in one game is an absolute premium. We need to make the most of what we've got instead of this, you know, this panic buying. It's what it comes to. Just because Jonathan Codge has gone for a month doesn't mean you need to buy Jordan Rhodes for 14 million.
Yeah, and Steve Bruce has talked about that his project of reviving Gabby has been with this in mind, with the fact that he knew that we would be losing well, both IU and Codger, actually, for the African Cup of Nations period, which can lead to you with just McCormack now that we've soldiered dead, and possibly Russian Hepburn Murphy. That is running into its own issues. And yeah, I don't know, we were linked to a few strikers. So Brentford's Scott Hogan came up prominently in discussions, though it's looking increasingly likely we might get gazumped by some kind of Premier League side on that front.
What scares me is it's almost like a lack of forethought in all of this. I mean, I'd go for a loan, because Villa have this problem of seemingly feeling like they're obligated to play all their summer purchases. You know, they're obligated to play McCormack, Codger and Adoma, everyone at the same time, all these expensive, you know, strikers, all these expensive forwards. Buying a Jordan Rhodes or a Scott Hogan doesn't really solve that problem. I mean, now we've lost Gisted, we are open to owning a new striker, but Gisted wasn't going to the Cup of Nations anyway. It seems like we have just latched onto the first club to give us an offer for someone and just took it, you know, not seeing what, you know, how the market would open up to us in January.
Yeah, the forward option, I do also like the idea of a loan option, though as loan options are always difficult. You know, if that player then succeeds really well, you know, are you actually looking to bring them in permanently, and how does that fit in the squad that you've got? But I agree with you, I'd be a little bit frustrated if we'd sold Gisted only to then try and bring another expensive striker option just, you know, 6 months after we went out and bought two very expensive striker options and apparently revived, you know, the ones that we thought we might get rid of. But if it's not going to be in the forward positions, where do we think it will be?
I think midfield is going to get it, Adam. I think midfield is looking very likely to be the soonest upgrade, with Henry Lansbury coming in from Nottingham Forest, which is a fairly good signing, I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that we're not exactly raiding the Forest midfield again, since Gary Gardner was always our player. you know, we're doing it again. But yeah, he's absolutely looking like he's going to be our first choice. How do you feel about the move?
I think it's brilliant. I think he's valued very cheaply for what he does. You know, since he's playing for Forest, and you know, they're not the most fashionable team at the moment, which is you know, unfortunate. But Lansbury, with Forest doing as poorly as they are, 20th in the Championship right now, he's got 6 goals and 3 assists in 17 appearances. That's less games than Rudy just said.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, and we do need some goal-scoring midfielders. You know, that's something that we've not seen a lot of so far this season. Even our more advanced midfielders, Grealish and Adoma, contributed something on that side. But, you know, you're in the Championship, you really do need goals coming in from quite a lot of your team from different areas. And it's looking increasingly likely like we're gonna get him, I think. You know, I wouldn't say it's a done deal, but at this point, you know, I think they're Nottingham Forest have all but accepted he's on his way.
Yeah, another interesting option, Adam. James McCarthy from Everton. A bit more expensive, but I think that is a brilliant move, long-term move as well. That's okay, someone who'll shore up your
midfield. I can't say that's my personal response to that one. But what...
Well, I've followed James McCarthy for a long time.
Okay.
I think he's a decent player. He's a magician. He's an absolute wizard with the football. Is it like a Barry Bannon? You know, someone who's, you know, understylingly creative. Someone who makes the team better. Like a Henry Lansbury, for instance, who we are buying. But we are looking to buy James McCarthy as well, which is something that's been passed around by a few papers at the moment. James McCarthy, I think, you know, he adds a lot to a team. He's not a goal scorer, no. But I think that we have such an abundance in forwards that if someone can actually get the ball to them, that would actually score a few more goals, Adam.
Mm-hmm. So you're seeing him as the kind of driving the team forward alongside Jedinak.
Yeah, exactly. Someone as a filter. But I think between Lansbury and McCarthy, I'd rather take McCarthy. but Lansbury is the cheaper option. Lansbury is the most realistic option, and Lansbury looks like the option most likely to happen. You know, he's doing it at this level right now for Forest. Put him in a team alongside Gardner and Jedinak. I think he's going to make those two players better. So regardless of what happens on that front, I think we've won, so to speak.
And would that be all that you think you can see in the midfield?
I don't know. I'd want to say buy more, but we aren't making the most of what we've got. So, you know, it's like your eyes are bigger than your belly, so to speak. We're looking at things that we want rather than seeing how we can make the most out of what we've got. There's Conor Hourihan, who's been spoke about a lot. But it doesn't look like it looks like he could step up to the Premier League, to be quite honest, from what I've seen of him.
Yeah, that one seems talk on that one seems to have dropped off. I think as the Lansbury talk has got bigger, the Conor Hourihan seems to be being signed from Barnsley, where he's been doing good things at League One. I mean, League One to Premier League would be a big, big leap for him.
Same leap as Ashley Westwood, to be fair, but let's not forget that Barnsley aren't doing that badly in the Championship.
No, and you know. Yeah, Hourihan has been. Yeah, sorry, when I say leap.
Yeah, yeah.
Championship. They are. Barnsley are in the Championship this season, though he's only played half a season there in the Championship.
Yeah, exactly. But to go to his, you know, statistics of them, 12 assists in 23 games for Barnsley in the Championship is damn impressive.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think he has been their star player, quite clearly.
I think if Villa can, you know, build a philosophy of signing the best, not just what's on offer in the lower leagues, but the best of the lower league, you know, the best players in the lower leagues, like Conor Hourihan, you know, Henry Lansbury, the best players of teams below them, they can make a real weaponized force in the Championship rather than hoping to scrape the players that the Premier League doesn't want. You know, James Chester turned out well, but you know, we're looking at Mille Jedinak, we're looking at players that aren't wanted by their clubs anymore. You know, Tommy Elphick, for example, best example of this is players who you think can do a job for you because they're not playing in the Premier League anymore that you're looking to scrape in. I don't think Villa should be doing that. They should be beating clubs to the punch. They can beat clubs to the punch on Hourihan and certainly Lansbury. They're very good, very similar midfielders. In terms of defence...
Just a quick point. What attracts me about Hourihan is he's very clearly on an upward trajectory.
He's
slightly younger than the other two. He's 25. McCarthy's 26, which is amazing. I would have put McCarthy like 4 years older than that. But anyway, and Lansbury's 26 as well. Lansbury's been doing it at Championship level. There's a question about whether he'd do it at Premier League level, but he'd obviously make us better. McCarthy has done it at Premier League level. Your only question is he on some kind of a downward curve? Hourihan is on an upward trajectory. Just because for that reason, I think I'd prefer Hourihan personally.
Yeah, Hourihan seems to be the best option, especially because of his current stats in the Championship as well. He's probably, I'd certainly say, one of the more informed players in our league. 5 goals, 12 assists in 23 games for Barnsley, and no offence to them, but that's pretty incredible considering the opposition they're up against, such as Newcastle and Aston Villa. But, defence, do we need to shore up in defence immediately?
Is Alan Hutton still playing for Aston Villa?
Yes.
I do believe he is, in which case, yes, we need to upgrade immediately.
One Carl Jenkinson looking to be brought in on loan. Villa are refusing to commit to a permanent transfer, which is, you know, attracting the eye of Arsenal, who do want to get rid of him. But a loan deal works best. We are yet to see what Delac can offer. Michael Richards is still somewhat serviceable as a right-back, and a right-back only, may I add. And Alan Hutton is Alan Hutton.
Yeah. We need to upgrade. I'm not sure if necessarily I want to enter the Arsenal loan dance again after the complete failure of the Mathieu Debuchy thing under Remy Gard. That was painful and didn't work out in the end. But yeah, we absolutely need someone down that right side. Look, Alan Hutton, there's a section of the Villa fan base that loves him because he looks like he makes an effort. He does. Yeah, he makes an effort. He cares about the football. He's just not any good. He's not good. His production is rubbish. He doesn't produce anything in attack. And he's far too often arrives about 10 minutes late to the defensive action and then looks pained when someone else scores. Yeah, well, you know, try and stop him. You know, it'd be...
Yeah, look. It's just...
we paid for a right-back in the summer as an upgrade. You know, Rich Delac unluckily got injured. need to pay for another upgrade now.
Yeah, that's unfortunately how it works. But Alan Hutton seems to be do the job of half players as badly as one job of a whole player. He's somewhat of a winger who ended up as a defensive fullback, but can't really do both. So he just exists on a plane of his own, you know, reality. That's why I think a loan deal for Jenkinson would fulfil somewhat a weakness in our team. He isn't the best player. He has his vulnerabilities. He's pretty much the same as Alan Hutton. But if we can just get someone who can make an actual tackle in the right side of our defence that isn't Leandro Bacuna, who should be playing in midfield, then I think we've done a goal there. We aren't doing badly. But left back seems to be a bit of action at left back as well, as Ali Sissoko looks to be moving on to Olympiacos. Not sure I'd miss him too much.
No, not really.
Very aggressive footballer, very overly aggressive footballer, who seems to make up for his mistakes in attack by committing terrible tackles and the occasional mad shirt pull in the box.
Yeah, put stretches of games together where he looks solid, you know, he looks physical and defensive, but then he'll commit a stupid foul, and attacking-wise, there's nothing going on. So I'm going to say this is one area where I'm happy that Jordan Amavi appears to be making that place his own. You know, I'm glad that we're giving Amavi, who I think is visibly improving every match.
Yeah, of course, Amavi looks to have it going on, especially under that weird period under Di Matteo where we put him on the left wing. But yeah, Adam, I think that's the January transfer window summed up. It's still early days yet, so we're far away from deadline day at the moment, where it all kicks off, and Villa will make a few last minute buys, I'm sure, with Tony Shaw looking to get a bit of publicity, likes to be in the public eye. But yeah, I think that's all summed up, Adam. What do you think? Any final thoughts?
Yeah, so I mean, let's just talk about what we think the areas of biggest priority are. For me, it's right back and central midfield. You know, I do want to see Aaron Tchibala brought back into the system to kind of compete, but we also, you know, it may turn out that we need a three-man midfield. If we do need a three-man central midfield, yeah, let's bring in, you know, Hourihan, McCarthy, Lansbury. They're all good options. I'm sure any of them would help us out there. I'm a bit worried that I haven't heard any talk about right back. Come on, let's get rid of Hutton. Let's do it. Let's move on.
Thankfully, he's out of contract at the end of the year, Adam, so you won't be waiting long unless Villa make a disastrous decision.
And up top, I know this is probably where we may be in disagreement with a lot of you listening, but I'm with you, James. I think personally, I would like to see us not panic buy another striker. You know, I'd like to see us try and work with what is a very talented lineup that we have right now. I wish it wasn't Gabby necessarily, and I also would hope that Hepburn, this stupid contract dispute with Hepburn Murphy, gets sorted out. You know, that may be another topic for another day, but maybe a loan, something like that, would work.
Yeah, pissing away money. You know, we're going to be victims of this transfer window if we decide to do a West Ham and bid for every available striker on the market, as seen by them, and their cheap bids for Defoe and Snodgrass get rejected. But yeah, midfield. I wouldn't miss two new midfielders, and you know, I wouldn't be upset about two new midfielders. Even if it is a backup option, just to get a bit of depth in there, so Steve Bruce is comfortable with maybe fielding more bodies in the middle of the park. But Adam, do you want to do a quick chat on our philosophy at the moment? Because it doesn't seem like we've got a plan.
That's a tricky one. Yeah, it is difficult. Okay, partly it's that Steve Bruce hasn't had time, you know, as a manager. But yeah, we don't seem to be playing with any clear philosophy. We seem to play a 4-2-3-1 pretty much every match. That's been pretty obvious so far. But it's just not... Yeah, we don't impose possession. We don't seem to play on the counter. We're not hugely physical as a team. And often it seems to be play reasonably poorly for 45 minutes and then chuck on all the strikers and hope we can nick a goal. Which does work occasionally. Seems to work against Leeds, as you said, by the medium of Justed. Didn't work against Cardiff, where we switched to one man apparently in central midfield with Tchibala and you know, put on all of our strikers. I think there are big questions for Bruce here. I'm not saying big questions as in, you know, should he go, should he stay? Of course he stays. Of course we need to make a long term project here. But I would like to see more of an identity in the side.
Yeah, the words long-term project really appeal to me, because what I see from the best clubs in the world and best managers in the world, it's long term. You know, there's no, you know, change. You know, it's not Paul Lambert suddenly switching to a 5-3-2 because he's lost the last four games. You know, it's sticking and working on your ideas. You know, Pep Guardiola's where he is and who he is for a reason. The great managers seem to have a philosophy that they build around, and the great clubs do. If Villa are going to get where Tony Shaw wants them to be, I'd expect to see some development this window towards that philosophy instead of just buying to fill weaknesses. Yeah. We should be building. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. It looks like we're just going to fill weaknesses.
I mean, let's be clear.
Right now,
Bruce isn't that kind of manager. He's not an ideologue. You know, he doesn't have necessarily a vision of the best way of, you know, what he thinks perfect football looks like. Maybe the Championship isn't necessarily the league for that either. Though I would say, you know, I think we've seen that possession-based football definitely can work and often gets you automatic promotion in the league. But just a settled lineup, some clear ideas about how we score goals, this is how we build up our attack, this is how we defend. That would be nice to see, because at the moment, it feels like each week we could go in and see a totally different Villa.
Yeah, and that's not good. It might be good for us watching, you know, the fans, but I don't think it's best for the players, and especially if we're looking to replace and, you know, shore up and fill up weaknesses every single transfer window. We might not get anywhere very fast. But Adam, I think that's enough on transfer window badness. Final note on positivity. What do you think the best winter transfer window signing Aston Villa have made is? Who do you think
best
the best
transfer window? This is an interesting question. So I had a quick look at the history of the transfer window, which is started 2002-2003, apparently. That's when the modern transfer window system was brought in. A little fact for you there on the pub quiz. Well, for me, there's only one winner, and I'm afraid to nick what I'm sure would have been your choice as well. It's Ashley Young.
Oh, that's a good one. My one's weird. You
won't
like my one.
I look forward to hearing that one. But Ashley Young, we bought him in 2007. In January, we bought him in from Watford. For a big fee, to be fair. Now, January big fees normally aren't a big sign. Normally they're a sign that you're panic buying. Let's point out, Ashley Young is great evidence against that. You know, okay, I know that he may not be who we're most fond of now. Let's not forget that for 4 years, he was probably the single most exciting player in a claret and blue shirt. With the possible exception of Jimmy Milner. Love Jimmy Milner. He was great. I mean, he was a fantastic player. You know, he always looked like he was going to score goals, always looked like he was making assists. And it was just so fun seeing him with Gabby, seeing him with John Carew. That was, you know, obviously very fond memories of that side. And he was just one of those players who, as soon as we signed him, clicked.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. My initial choice, which is why I said it was weird, was Sean Maloney. Now, this is going to sound quite weird, but there was a time when Sean Maloney seemed to be the best attacking threat that Villa had, but for personal reasons, you know, homesickness, depression, whatever, he didn't perform well at Villa as well as he should have. But every time he came on, Adam, he scored a goal, and I remember being at Villa Park as a kid and seeing him score last-minute goals against Fulham, and he seemed like a wizard. He seemed to be, you know, one of those players who can do it all, and unfortunately his career hasn't, you know, panned out to the, you know, those high prospects of when he was at Celtic scoring every game. But he did well at Villa, but I've changed my mind because I forgot that John Carew actually signed for Aston Villa in the winter transfer window, and John Carew was a very average footballer who seemed to constantly perform above and beyond his ability for Aston Villa for whatever reason. But yeah, one of my Villa heroes, John Carew, and I completely forgot he signed in January. But him and Ashley Young and Gabby Barnhall combined to amazing effect. And I think that leads us back to what we just answered. Is a philosophy would be good, you know, building around key parts of the team, building around Grealish and Amavi, stuff like that. I'd like to see a bit more of that. Winter transfer windows.
Seeing Jonathan Codra play does bring back for me memories of Big John Carew. You know, very fond memories. I think, I don't know, you know, they seem to play in similar ways, big bustly strikers, you know, unexpectedly good touch for a big man, you know, a couple of long fire shots in their jocker. Yeah, he was a really fun player to watch. And as you said, it was watching him play with Young, with Milner, with Downing, that made that team so fun.
Yeah, so ideally Aston Villa can be fun again if they get their ideas together, find out some things, and build around the players.
We should point out that we're recording this match just before the Tottenham match today, our FA Cup third round draw. So we're fingers crossed for that. And by the time you're listening to this, well, you know, either yay for that brilliant win, commiserations on the disappointing loss, or wow, we're taking them back to Villa Park. Delete as appropriate.
Okay, well, any final thoughts, Adam?
Not at all, just, you know, hoping that we come out of this this January transfer window. Let's not panic buy. Let's just fix where we need to fix and hopefully drive on for those playoff spaces and drive on for promotion. Get back to the Premier League where we belong.
Yeah, for me, James Rushton at Jeremy Rushton on Twitter, and Adam Clark as usual. Adam Clark is on Twitter, and unfortunately, a commiserations to Ellis at its underscore Ellis, who's lost somewhere in the space-time continuum. And we'll catch you all later for the 10th episode of On the Pod. Thanks for listening.